Welcome to The Lead, a podcast about how to get ahead in the news industry from the people who did. I'm your host, Jacqueline Ganun. Today, I'm excited to talk with Alex Krivar, who's been a freelance travel writer for more than 30 years. A while after graduating from the University of Georgia, he packed up and moved to the Balkans, a region in southeastern Europe. Once he got there, he started writing vivid and insightful stories about the region, and he hasn't stopped since. I caught him while he was in Athens, Georgia, and not Croatia, and in this episode, we talk about his career, living abroad, and how travel writing has changed since he entered the industry. But first, a word from our sponsor. This episode is produced by the Cox Institute for Journalism Innovation, Management, and Leadership at the University of Georgia's Grady College. Now, here's The Lead. Hey, Alex, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So I want to start with a really broad question. Why travel journalism? What is it about it that has kept you going back and doing it for around 30 years?
I wasn't necessarily looking to become a travel journalist, but at the time, and this is the mid-90s, it was a road that seemed possible, one that was hard to get into because there was a limited amount of real estate, as we say, meaning space in magazines. There weren't websites. And it gave me the ability to move a little bit and not to be beholden to sitting in an office all the time. I've always been somebody who's a little bit more drawn to the concept of the journey rather than the destination. So travel writing wasn't necessarily what I had intended to do, but I definitely intended to work as a journalist, and I definitely have a hard time staying put even now. So it became kind of the natural way to go.
Yeah, I feel like that's a good example of working with your strengths and with your personality and not trying to force yourself to be something that you're not.
Yeah, and I would say to a large degree, it's become something almost as a way to be nomadic. So leaving college and saying I'm going to be a travel writer definitely did not happen. Leaving college and realizing that writing was something that I could probably do, doing it successfully was a different thing. But when you're young, you don't really need to worry so much about trying to be successful. You just need to kind of learn how to do it.
Yeah, I think that's great advice, something that I could definitely keep in mind a little bit more. So creating a beat for yourself kind of becomes your work, and in your case, a little bit of your life, because you moved to the Balkans, and that ended up being a big beat that you covered. So what was it like to pick up and move there, you know, across the world, presumably away from your friends and family, assuming you didn't have any there? So was that...
I think it's assuming you had any...
No, sorry. Assuming you didn't have any in the Balkans where you ended
up
moving.
Right.
So was that hard for you? Did that require a lot of courage, or was it just something where you were kind of like, well, this is what I'm doing?
You definitely should do stuff when you're young. You should do stuff all your life. It keeps you young. But at that point in my life, I really wasn't thinking. I mean, of course, I love my parents and my family, and I have lots of great friends here in Athens and in a lot of different places. But for me, there certainly wasn't any fear because there was not, because I didn't know what I was getting into, which is a great reason to do anything young. So to me, what I realized early on, similar kind of to the reason that I got into travel writing, is I knew that I needed to break my own ground. And this was a period in the mid to late 90s where Eastern Europe, and especially the Western Balkans, where I have focused a lot of energy, were really coming into their own in a post-communist world. So travel there was opening up in a way that it hadn't previously. Subconsciously or otherwise, I realized that I was going to be one of the few folks who were covering this region. And I also realized that I needed to be somewhere where I wasn't having to compete heavily with people who knew the business a lot better than I did. So once you specialize, then you have a little bit more freedom to make mistakes because you're one in a small pool of people who are doing it instead of somebody who's competing with a lot of older, more established, and better journalists. Certainly, I missed my family and friends, but I knew that in order for me to be somebody who didn't look back and make excuses for why something didn't work out, I needed to take some chances.
There's a lot of good stuff in there about, like, not letting fear hold you back from things,
right,
and living with regret. So along with being a writer, you're also a mountaineer and a cyclist, which I find really cool. How did you kind of get into those hobbies, and do they impact your journalism at all?
Yeah. The main reason why I did those things is because it is what I enjoy doing. I like hiking, and I like mountaineering, and I like cycling, and those are just hobbies for me. But in the same way that almost nothing that I've ever done has been overly orthodox, which I also think is a great piece of advice, is don't worry so much about what it is that you think you're supposed to do. Figure out what it is that you like to do, and then figure out how that provides you strengths, and then be brave enough to go after that. So for me, I like to do those things, to take adventurous trips. So the hobby was able to feed what I covered, and what I covered was able to feed the hobby, and those lines are blurred. And I think the hiking is part of a story. The hiking plus hiking to a place that represents culture, that becomes a better story. Hiking and cycling to get to a place where you learn more about a people, their culture, the things that are important to a country, that's a great story. And if you start to combine those things and you do it in an innovative way, eventually you do stories that you're comfortable with. And that's an important thing for your evolution, because all of us as travel writers and just as journalists wrestle with a bunch of years of kind of feeling like you aren't good at it, you can't get any stories, you feel a little inferior, you're a little desperate with your pitches. I mean, you know, I went through a bunch of years like that, like everybody does. So all of that, the adventure part of it, was necessary for me to become comfortable and to learn not just what it meant to be a travel, what it meant for me to be a travel writer.
I feel like people can, your sources and your editors and just in readers, they can really tell when you actually care about what you're covering. So I think that's great advice, like finding a niche of something that you actually care about, and not just like, I'm clocking in and writing about this, right. I guess, but people can really tell when you approach it with that energy. And along those lines of adventure tourism, so you were instrumental in the creation of the Via Dinerica, which is a hiking trail, and the Trans-Dinerica cycle route that forms a cultural corridor across 8 Western Balkans countries. So how did those projects come about? They're kind of their first of their kind, and what has been your role with those?
So the Western Balkans make up 8 countries, and I'm only going to list them for the sake of just because folks just keep hearing this region. It's Southeastern Europe, and when we say the Western Balkans, it's Slovenia, Croatia, Bosnia and Herzegovina, Montenegro, Albania, North Macedonia, Kosovo, and Serbia. I spent a lot of time in the Balkans. Part of it was you become comfortable in a place, and once you have this kind of amount of hard-earned knowledge, and I say that knowledge is maybe even too strong because, you know, as a foreigner, I'm doing my best to understand it in the way that I can. I can never understand it the way somebody who grew up there. And it's a very complex, very interesting, very beautiful history. So you go there very much aware of the fact that you are coming in as the dumbest person in the room. Everybody you're talking to has lived this history. They know this history. So it's a lot of years of embarrassing ignorance, which is fine. That's part of being a journalist. Part of being a journalist is being able to be confidently ignorant. You're not supposed to be smart. What you're supposed to be is a sponge. And then from that, you take that information and then you hopefully relate it to your readers. As the go-between, you have this kind of uncomfortable spot of always being kind of a fool. So after a bunch of years of being there and having a bunch of friends there and really putting in the time as a fool, you start to realize that there is a chance to create rather than just critique. It is satisfying. It's satisfying to be able to create something that works for the betterment of the region. Hiking trails and cycling trails, which is the Via Dinerica is a hiking trail, the Trans-Dinerica is a cycling trail. A, they're great for stories. Anytime you can include multiple countries that are loaded with culture and include adventure, you are hitting on a lot of really touch button stuff that editors want. It also becomes something like an economic engine for the region. And everybody loves to talk about sustainability. But sustainability isn't just about picking up trash. It's about making sure the environment stays healthy, sure. But it's also about creating something where locals have their own voice, they have some level of control of the economic situation instead of just a foreign company coming in and building a hotel and having all that money go back to that country. If you build a route, the route then gets filled in by cafes and places to stay. And it was important to me to give back, I guess, but I don't want to make it sound like it was so philanthropic. It was important to me to do something that I really enjoyed in the region. It was important for me to create something that I knew were going to be great stories for journalists who were going to come in. And selfishly, I love to hike and cycle there. So we were basically creating, I mean, I didn't do it alone. I did it with a group of people who also were very instrumental in the creation of these things. But we were basically creating our own playground.
Yeah, I guess that goes back to, you know, having a passion and caring about it. That leads to great projects like that. And I did want to ask about this. Something that I admire about your work is that you are responsible in terms of coming in as an outsider, as a journalist, and like living in these places. And so you are a consultant with Responsible Tourism. So what does that mean to you, and kind of how do you practice that, I guess, both in your life and then in your work in journalism?
I care a lot about the idea of travel being something that is not quite so selfish. I have a little bit of an existential crisis with travel, and I want people to travel. I think it's important for everybody to be able to open themselves up, play the fool sometimes, understand their shortcomings, accept and appreciate other cultures. I just don't think people should feel like they deserve it. They get to, if they're lucky enough. It was important for me to be somebody who promotes the kind of tourism that I want to see there. I personally won't cover a story if it is for mass tourism. I don't want to look back at my clips years later and say, I did a bunch of cheap stories about, you know, these all-inclusive resorts that were not particularly responsible to the places where they exist. So part of the reason to get into adventure tourism was also because I knew I could control that narrative. If you're hiking or cycling somewhere, you are being responsible, not just environmentally, but you move slowly. When you move slowly through a village that doesn't normally see tourists sees you. You have to stop because you're hungry. If you're hungry and you've been cycling for 50 miles, you're going to stop and you're going to put money into an economy where you are with families that are there. So part of it is me being somewhat wanting to give back. Again, I roll my eyes there because I don't want to make it sound like I've got some kind of great philanthropic agenda. I'm not that nice of a person, but it is that to some degree. The selfish reason is I want these places to continue to exist for the next 20 or 30 or 40 years. When a place starts to do things irresponsibly, it's not a matter of if they will be changed. It's a matter of when they will be changed. The difference between what a place is now and what it will be when it's over-touristed and doesn't maintain its former personality, it doesn't take a decade. Sometimes it takes a year. One huge season can change a place. So it's not up to me to tell this region, of course, how to be, but it is up to me to decide where I place my energy.
That aspect of being able to hold your head high, like you live in these places.
Right.
Like this is your community. You're really making yourself a part of it. So it's not like you're parachuting in and if they don't like it, you're gone. It's like you need to do these things responsibly. So I think that's great.
And, you know, when you live these places, you do have friends there. You're having coffee with people. You're having coffee in the same cafes. And there's nothing uglier than the opportunistic foreigner, in my opinion. And, you know, early on, I was lucky enough not to be smart enough to be opportunistic. When I got to be successful enough to be opportunistic, I had already seen that kind of foreigner, and I did not want to be that person. So I want folks to know that I've tried to do it the right way.
And as a freelancer, you kind of have a little bit more of that freedom to say no to stories. You do your own pitches, so you're kind of able to have that freedom. Can you talk about what it's like to be a freelancer and, you know, be sending, how many pitches do you send out? How do you get these placements in these national and international publications that you've written for?
If you want to be a successful freelancer, learn how to pitch. And learning how to pitch means getting to the point, making it fairly short, understanding the publication, understanding the voice, and then getting out with them understanding that A, the person who is pitching understands the process, B, they pulled it off with clean copy, even in the pitch. So I feel pretty good that that's what they'll do. And C, that there's somebody who has the wherewithal to actually pull this off, and that assigning them the story will be good for the publication. So having the wherewithal to understand, make mistakes, and get over a certain level of desperation, because editors can smell desperation like a dog, and knowing that you're going to get better, and then getting to a place where you're writing good pitches, you know your stuff, you've got a place that you cover regularly, you have some kind of specialization, they will all gel. And then you start to get stories. But, you know, just so it is known, out of 10 pitches that I pitch now, you know, 7 of them are still no's for all kinds of reasons. For me, at my height, 15 years ago as a travel writer, I probably was pitching 7-10 stories a week, and, you know, getting 2-3 good stories a month, which I wouldn't have wanted more. You know, I don't want to spread my attention too thin anyway. Now, sometimes I don't pitch an idea for a month. Sometimes I pitch an idea every 2 weeks. Just depends.
Yeah, I feel like that's connected to also just getting over yourself, and that sense of entitlement goes back to, like, with traveling. Like, it's that same idea where you can't think that you're all that when you're coming into somewhere where, when you go anywhere, really, but especially when you're going into somewhere where you don't live and you don't work. But that's, I think that's great advice for young people, to not get discouraged and then also tone down the ego just a little bit. But you mentioned this, just kind of how the industry has changed. So you worked through the advent of the internet, switched to digital. You mentioned that pitches used to be letters, now they're emails. Can you talk about how you've seen the travel writing industry change? And for people who want to do it, do you think that your path is still feasible? Do you think that it might be the best path that exists nowadays? Like, what is your perception of how the industry has changed?
I don't think people could follow my exact path. And not because they couldn't do it better, honestly. It was real necessary to be real sharp back then, because there weren't as many opportunities. There's a critical thinking aspect that doesn't exist today in the same way it existed back then. When you thought and wrote something, you needed to really own it, because the process of getting it was hard, harder. What didn't seem hard back then. If you wanted to go research something, you needed to go to the card catalog and you needed to pull a book from a shelf. You had to go through reels of microfiche. When you look for a subject in Google and you get back a ton of information, that's great. But you haven't earned it in the same way that you had to back then. So one thing that I would say is, I don't think it can be exactly replicated. Some folks could probably be much sharper than I am. But they should understand that the information that they gather should be coupled with really taking time to think about what the value of that information is. Honestly, I don't think that I probably would be a travel writer today. I don't know what I would do for a living. Part of it is because they make so little. Speaking to how the industry has changed, in those days, things paid better. It was harder to get in, but there was a lot of money in print publications. There was a lot of money in magazines and newspapers and a lot of ads. It has become a much more PR-driven industry, because the magazines don't have the money, so they have to allow travel writers to go on what we would call press trips, where a PR company or the destination pays for everything. It doesn't mean that the writing isn't good, but it means, by definition, it's no longer quote-unquote journalism. I think that the next great stage in travel journalism is going to be somebody who is able to thread that needle and be innovative in how they are juggling honest reporting, the PR work of press trips, and also working with publications in a way so that there's honest stories that are true to the destinations.
Yeah, well, I think you just covered my last question. Was going to be, what advice do you have for people that want to enter?
Well, I do have a couple of things that would be slightly more advice than that. The first thing I would say is go find a beat. Go find something that you genuinely want to do, and in a place that you want to do. Embed yourself somewhere. be somebody who is willing to really learn about a destination and then have publications see you as somebody that can cover this for them regularly. Be somebody who understands a region, understands a culture as well as a foreigner can, and somebody who has made the kind of connections to be truly embedded in an area. And the second thing I would say is, even if you are taking PR trips, occasionally do things that are on your own dime. Have some skin in the game. You write stories differently if you have financed it. You do not get those stories wrong. You find your sources. You write the kinds of stories that you're not going to waste your own time and money. So unless you're independently wealthy, can you do that every time? Or unless you started in an earlier place, can you do that every time? Probably not. But can you do it occasionally and keep the good lessons of being a journalist who is truly involved in the process? I think that that's a really good idea. It's probably the best advice I could give somebody.
That's great advice. Just take pride in what you do and work within the environment that exists today. Thank you so much for joining me. I really enjoyed our conversation.
It was my pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you again to Alex for joining me on this episode, and thank you for tuning in to The Lead. I'm your host, Jacqueline Gannett. Our executive producer is Charlotte Barnum, and this show is supported by the Cox Institute. To keep up with The Lead and hear more from media leaders, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and be sure to follow us on X, formerly Twitter. We are at The Lead Podcast. This is where I would usually say, see you next time, but this is actually my last episode as host of The Lead. You'll hear me once more in a bonus episode when I introduce our new host, but after that, I'm going to be just a listener. I want to give a huge thank you to the wonderful guests I've had the honor of interviewing, and for you all for listening to the past 2 years. Thank you so much.